The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome to the program. Thought for a second we were going to be a little later than we end up being, but when it's all said and done, only about 13 minutes late, Big Blue Jays win. They're back to 500, so that's good news. And now a mini edition of The Big Show kicks off with Steinberg, Will, and Logan. It's a short one. It's a game day. And let's get right to it, Will. 3-2 overtime win last night for the Flames. They've got the Habs tonight. And if you're still holding on to playoff hope, this is what you call a must win. If you're in that locker room, this has to be looked at as a massive game. One game at a time, only control what you can control. All those cliches, sure. But this is a massive, massive game and an opportunity for the Flames to maybe start to climb themselves out. Right now, these last two wins over the Oilers on Saturday and last night against the Maple Leafs, those wins have kept them breathing, have kept their heads just slightly above water, and they haven't gone under. But now, if you start to string a couple of wins together against Montreal, you win today, you win on Friday, now maybe you can start to piece together a way they can get themselves back into fighting for a playoff spot. So here's a chance, Will, to actually start coming back to life. If you've given up hope, I get it. If you don't think it's going to happen, I understand. But if you're still holding on, this turns into one of those no questions asked must-win games tonight.
I don't have a lot to add on that, Pat, because you nailed it. And for me, maybe a little more curiosity on tonight, because this is also a Flames group, and this core group has been one that hasn't had a lot of success in spots like this. You just mentioned kind of one game at a time and focus on the thing in front of you or the things in front of you, and that's obviously what you can say from the outside, and that's the easy part of it. And you know, again, in big games and big moments, this team has not shown up consistently enough to, you know, do anything that gives you confidence for a situation like tonight. So I'm curious to see how they begin. How do they, you know, get into this one tonight? Because I would suggest that any loss, I know there's a lot of people that say, you know, win 4 or 5 against the Montreal Canadiens for those remaining games. But I think you got to win all 5 if you're Calgary, because, you know, Montreal is playing some pretty good hockey. And I would suggest that they're not going to lose every other game they play from now to the end of the regular season. So I think you've got to win all 5. And for that reason, this is a big one tonight. I think everyone in that locker room knows how important these 2 points are. So I'm looking at this game tonight, Pat, and wondering if the Flames can somehow buck the trend and do the opposite of what we've come to know with this core group. Is in a big spot like this, they've more often than not laid a bit of an egg.
Well, I'll give them this. You know, over the last couple of games, they feel like they seem like a looser hockey team. And I wonder if just trade deadlines passed and they're kind of out of it. Nobody's expecting them to do anything.
Well, that's why they didn't have any pressure, though, Pat. And now they got all the pressure.
And that's what I'm curious about. Like, yeah. Are they able to continue to play that loose brand of hockey? And we'll see if they are able to tonight. This is a huge game, and you know, you win this game, then Friday's game, the exact same conversation. That's the thing, is that, you know, whether it's 4-1 or 5-0, every one of these games against Montreal, they play 5 of their next 7 against the Habs. Every single one, doesn't matter what the result is, but especially if tonight is a win in regulation, well, then Friday's game, we're having the same conversation about that being a must-win once again. Like, the pressure situations, if they're able to start creeping a little bit closer and making their math a little less daunting, then these conversations are going to continue to be had.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So that's why I'm maybe even more tonight, you know, interested in how this team responds. Because the last two games, everybody's counting you out. The trade deadline's coming. You knew you were going to lose some pieces. They had no pressure on those two games. And we talked about it a little bit on Monday with Elliot Friedman. I don't want to make it a bigger situation than it is, and certainly don't have to spend a lot of time on it, Pat. But let's not forget that was an Oilers team that went through a lot of emotions on Saturday. And they look very much like a team that was playing 4-6. So I'm sounding like I'm taking everything away from the Flames. I'm not. I'm just trying to frame it that, okay, now it actually begins. Now you're facing the music, and that's why I'm more interested in what tonight brings than any other night this season.
Puck drop, 5 o'clock here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Let's take a look back before we go any further. It is time for last night's game in a minute. Let me
know. Game in a minute. Brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the brand new 2022 QX55 for $299 semi-monthly with $4,995 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome inside Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, where in his 1,000th career regular season National Hockey League game, Milan Lucic and the 17-21-3 Calgary Flames will face their former teammate, David Rittich, and the Scotia North Division leading 28-11-3 Toronto Maple Leafs. Here's Lucic in front. Bellamacchi scores! In his 1,000th NHL game, Milan Lucic sets up Juuso Välimäki, who one-times the puck past David Rittich, and it's 1-0 Flame. Riley walks the line and shoots. That shot bounces around, and now Hyman scores. The puck takes a crazy carom off the end boards, right out in front of the Flames net, and the Maple Leafs answer back and tie this game at one. Each of their last two games going just 2-for-4 in the PK. Here's Lindholm with a shot. He scores! The Flames win the offensive zone faceoff, make a couple of quick passes, and then Elias Lindholm rips the puck past David Rittich. The Flames score a power play goal and take a 2-1 lead. Give it to Lindholm, but he can't get it out. Brody holds it in right wing side. Puts it to Hyman. Hyman to Tavares in front. Kerfoot shoots and scores! Flames couldn't get the puck out, and the Maple Leafs make them pay. And the Leafs have tied this game at 2. Final few seconds will come off the clock as Richie gets a last-second shot away, stopped by Rittich, and the Flames and the Maple Leafs are going to head to overtime. Turns to the middle of the ice, steps across his blue line, gets to the red line, doesn't like what he sees, and he'll drop the puck to Gaudreau. Returns it to Lindholm. Lindholm able to settle down the pocket, center it, Gaudreau dances in and scores! A marvelous move by Johnny Gaudreau, who wins this game in overtime. No goalpost kisses, no stick flips, no big hugs from Matthew Tkachuk for David Rittich in his Maple Leafs debut. Sorry, big save, Dave. The Flames win this hockey game 3-2 in overtime.
Game in a minute. Brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the brand new 2022 QX55 for $299 semi-monthly with $4,995 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Just quickly, and I see you engaging with somebody on the text line. Well, and I'm kind of with you. Like, I know it's the second half of the back-to-back. I know everybody's wondering who starts in net. We don't have a confirmation, and we won't for a little over 2 hours when the Flames hit the ice for warm-up, but I just, like, okay, it's not confirmed, but I think we're all expecting Markstrom tonight. I just, knowing the situation they're in.
Whew. Yeah, we've talked about Darryl and goaltenders and riding as number one. I would fall to the ground dead if Louis Domingue is starting tonight. I would be stuck.
I don't want you to die. I like you.
By the way, also just quickly, because I know we got to run and we got a lot of things going on this jam-packed show, so probably don't have a ton of time to talk about it, especially with the roundtable coming up next, Pat. But I just want to say the play on the winner by Elias Lindholm is absolutely insane.
Yep.
That puck was bobbling like crazy. It was about 5 feet over his head, and he's able to calm that down somehow and put it through Riley's legs, and then an unreal finish by Gaudreau. I was hoping for longer than, 30-plus seconds
36.
Of overtime, but that play, I just wanted to acknowledge it because it's unbelievable, the skill on that play by Lindholm.
Not a very good back check for Austin Matthews either. That was like, what are you doing?
Nice, too worried on 50 goals, baby.
It's like, what are you doing? He completely left the wrong guy alone and went 2 to Lindholm. And you're right, made an unbelievable play. And Gaudreau was not going to miss in that situation.
I was
going to
say, in Matthews' defense, Lindholm should have made that play. So
fair. Okay. Fair. Although I just feel like leaving Gaudreau alone, the one guy on the Flames team that you don't want to leave alone like that 3-on-3, probably Johnny
Gaudreau.
That's okay. Okay, we're live in the Iconic studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Mini edition of the big show is underway, 4 o'clock for Calgary Flames warm-up. Let's keep the Flames talk going around the corner. Must win? That's what we're going to be talking about with Derek Wills on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Next, stay with us, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. With 35 service bays to get your Mercedes-Benz ready for spring adventures. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.
Okay, gentlemen, we are 2 hours from warm-up on the ice at the Bell Centre and about 2.5 hours from puck drop between Calgary and Montreal. This is the team Calgary is directly chasing for the final playoff spot in the North Division. It's a 6-point edge for Montreal. That's the situation that we're talking about going into the first of 5 remaining head-to-head matchups between these two teams. Welcome to the Daily Flames Roundtable. I'm Pat, he's Will, and now Derek Wills, the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us to complete our roundtable. So how do we look at tonight? Must win, can't lose. How do you look at this game between Calgary and Montreal?
Yes and yes. I mean, the Flames have won 2 in a row, and it feels like they've got something going here, so they have to keep it going. And this is the first game of a stretch where they'll play the Canadiens in 5 of 7. And this is their window. They have to win at least 4 of the 5 games. Better yet, they win all 5 or at least pick up a point in all 5. And last night's victory felt big. I mean, you're coming off a 5-0 shutout victory over the Oilers on Saturday night. You want to follow that up with another good game. And they do. Played really well in last night's 3-2 victory over the Maple Leafs. And there was some in-game adversity. They had a 1-0 lead. Maple Leafs tied it. Flames took a 2-1 lead. Maple Leafs tied it again and seemed to have all the momentum in the third period. And then they get a 4-minute-long power play and they lose all that momentum. Excellent job on the penalty kill by the Flames. And that kind of set the table for them to win that hockey game last night. So now you're 6 points back. The Habs do have 3 games in hand. You can't control what happens in those games. Maybe they win them all. Maybe they lose them all. Maybe they go 500 and pick up 3 of a possible 6 points. But all the Flames can do right now is take care of their own business. And that starts tonight with a proverbial 4-pointer versus the Canadiens. If you win it in regulation time, you're only 4 points back. And here's something else that should give Flames fans who haven't thrown in the towel yet, and maybe even some who have, a little hope going down the stretch here. So we know about the Canadiens' condensed schedule. But listen to this. They're going to play their final 17 games in a span of 28 days. In comparison, the Flames will play their final 14 games in a span of 33 days. So the Flames have 3 fewer games, and they have 1 week more to play them in. So that's pretty crazy. And then when you look at strength of schedule, so the Canadiens' final 17 games, 5 against the Flames, 4 against the Oilers, 4 against the Maple Leafs, 3 against the Senators, and 1 against the Jets. The Flames' final 14 games, 5 against the Canadiens, 4 against the Canucks, who haven't played in a while and should be far from 100% with the COVID issues they've had. 2 against the Senators, got to win those ones. Won't be easy, but you got to. 2 against the Oilers and then 1 against the Jets. So when you look at remaining strength of schedule, fellas, the Flames are at 528. That's 6th easiest in the NHL, easiest in the Scotia North Division. And the Canadiens are at 549. That's 13th easiest in the league, 4th easiest or hardest in the North Division. So I know I just threw a lot at you, but if you're looking for a silver lining, if you're looking for some hope, that's the best I can do.
Here's all I know is everyone said it would be easy. They'd be the free space on the bingo card going in, and the Flames have lost 5 of 7 to Ottawa this season. So when you say easy and Flames, I kind of tune out at that point. For me, they've got to win the game that's in front of them right now. I believe they've got to win all 5 against Montreal because the Canadiens are not going to lose every other game they play from now to the end of the season. And the Flames really can't be worrying about much else except for winning these games against the Habs. And I said it to Pat last segment, Derek, curious where you're at on it, because we've all watched this core group to the last 6-7 seasons. And in spots like this, the Flames more often than not have laid an egg. And what I mean by that is the last 2 games were easy. There were no pressures. You just had the trade deadline. Everyone's counting you out and you won an overtime against Toronto. Saturday, whether you want to buy into it or not, Connor McDavid, I thought spoke very well and very eloquently after the game on Saturday. They were put in an awful position by the league to play that game hours after Colby Kay's funeral, and you could see it in the game on Saturday night. And I'm not trying to say the Flames didn't deserve the 2 points, but man, they were pretty much playing against a team that didn't know there was a game going on. So for me, it's all about tonight. This playoff push, if you even have one, begins this evening. And this is a team that in situations like this, where there is pressure and you know how important it is, it's not gone well. I can't wait to see what happens in about 2.5 hours.
I'll go quick here, but I'll use the term can't lose. I think must win. Yeah, I guess. But even if you win, you're not guaranteed anything, right? You can't lose. If they lose this game, now you're back to 8, and I'm sorry, you can tell me all you want about sweeping the next 4. You lose the first one, I think you're in a rough spot. And much crazier things have happened. But I'm going to lean more towards can't lose than I do to must win when it comes to this game tonight.
Yeah, and I think this game is the most important game so far this season for the Flames for a number of reasons. Number one, if you lose it in regulation, like you said, Pat, then the last 2 wins don't really mean much. You're 8 back again. But if you win it in regulation time, now all of a sudden in the span of 48 hours, you go from being 8 points out of the 4th and final playoff spot to 4 points out with another game coming up against the Canadiens on Friday and a chance to close that gap to 2. And then all of a sudden things look a lot different. And again, the Habs do have the 3 games in hand, but until they pick up points in them, then they don't really mean anything. So this is one the Flames, I think, have to have for those reasons, but also because it feels like they've finally got something going right now. They finally gained some confidence and picked up some momentum, and that's been really difficult for this team to do this season. So you've got a chance to build on those 2 intangibles with another win tonight. Won't be easy. It's a back-to-back. It's a 3-4, but doesn't matter. You got to find a way.
So that game, this game tonight goes at 5 o'clock. Our Calgary Flames warm-up goes at 4 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. And see what the Flames can do in a spot where, at the very least, they've got an opportunity to close the gap a little bit more. Guys, if the Flames play meaningful hockey between now and the rest of the season, how many games of their final 14 is Jacob Markstrom going to have to start?
14? I mean, honestly, without David Rittich, they don't have a great plan B. Louis Domingue hasn't played a game in this league since March 1st of last season. It's been 409 days. Artem Zagadoulin has played 1 game in the NHL in his hockey career. So I don't think you go to either one of those guys unless you absolutely have to. As long as Jacob Markstrom is healthy and as long as the Flames are still in the playoff race, I know some people don't think they are, but as long as they believe they are, I think you have to keep going back to Jacob Markstrom, don't you?
Yeah, you have to. There's no question about it. I said to Pat earlier, Derek, not to be too morbid, but I will drop dead tonight if Louis Domingue is somehow starting.
I said I don't
game.
Want him to die.
Like, I would be absolutely stunned if there is somehow a situation where that is not their starting goaltender come 5 o'clock this evening. I would be absolutely stunned. So, yeah, I think until you're mathematically out of it, and at that point, you probably entertain shutting Markstrom down. But until you get there, I think you go with him every single night.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me because we've already seen Markstrom break down, not break down, but we've seen him get worn down already this season prior to Daryl Sutter getting here when they were riding him and using him as the workhorse, as you'd expect, the $6 million goalie. I get that. But you know, I've talked to enough people out of Vancouver that have suggested that when this guy gets tired and when this guy's workload gets high, it's not to say he can't handle it and he wants to go every single night, but we start to see some cracks in the armor and some of the things that we start to see, he gets a little too deep in his net. And the other thing that we start to see is he starts to charge and he starts to be a little bit more aggressive on loose pucks. And we've seen that this year. And I know there's 14 games to go and there are some breaks, especially at the back end of this schedule. But I do think you have to, at the very least, have in mind managing the workload. And that's what I'm interested to see, because I don't know if it's ideal to go 14 of 14 for Markstrom. I don't. You've still got back-to-backs and all that type of stuff. But I also
nothing
don't
of
know
their situation is ideal.
Exactly. No. And I don't know if it's ideal to put Domingue or Zagadoulin in at any point as well. I guess the only thing that I'll say is you have to take more than just Markstrom's cues, would be what I say. If you're Daryl Sutter, I talked to him today for the coach's show, and he said, look, you know, LaBarber's the guy that works with him. I make the final decision as to who starts, but LaBarber works with him, and they're the ones who get his game up to speed, and they're constantly working together. Markstrom's going to say he's good to go every single game. I just think you need to start looking at some other cues if he is starting to wear down, even if it's just one game where you put in another goaltender, Domingue or Zagadoulin. I don't think it's completely out of the question if they're playing meaningful hockey for most of their final 14, which remains to be seen if they will be doing.
Yeah, I would start Jacob Markstrom every single game as long as he's good to go and as long as you're still in the race. I really would, because here's the good thing, and I talked about it off the top. The Flames' schedule is much less condensed than the Canadiens' schedule. I mean, they've got 14 games in 33 days starting tonight. So that's not even a game every 2 days. I mean, that's pretty well spread out. It's not like the Canadiens, who will play 17 games in 28 days, and their number one goaltender, Carey Price, is hurt right now. So they've got to really lean on Jake Allen at this time. But the Flames, after tonight, only have one back-to-back left on their schedule, and that's back-to-back games against the Canadiens at home next Friday and Saturday. So there's really no reason outside of that two-game set where the Flames couldn't go to Jacob Markstrom in every game they have left on their schedule this season. So assuming he starts in the second half of his back-to-back tonight, if they give him that back-to-back against the Habs next Friday and Saturday, I don't see any other stretch in the schedule where he can't get the start and shouldn't get the start. So we'll see what they do. And the bottom line is, and I said this before the Flames traded David Rittich on Sunday, is that if the Flames are going to get back into the playoff race, stay in the playoff race, however you want to look at it, Jacob Markstrom is going to have to be their best player down the stretch. That's how I saw it. And I feel even stronger about that now, because now you don't have a good plan B in David Rittich. I mean, with all due respect to Louis Domingue, he's played a lot of games in this league. And with all due respect to Artem Zagadoulin, I think he's an up-and-comer. Those guys aren't number one goaltenders in the NHL. And if the Flames, who have had a tough time scoring this year, are going to win enough games to make it interesting down the stretch, I don't see any way they can do it without Jacob Markstrom between the pipes.
Let me just say this, guys. What if the difference of resting him once or twice is the difference? Like, what if by not resting him and he wears down, they go 7-7 in their final 14, but by resting him even once, they can go 10-4 because he got that rest, and one of the losses is Domingue's, and he goes 10-3 as opposed to 7-7. What? And I don't think that's completely out of the question, because I do think rest is important. What if that is the case? And I just think that you have to, playing devil's advocate, I don't think you can throw the importance of rest out when it comes to the overall body of work.
Yeah, and I mean, in hindsight, if he hadn't played 13 of the first 15 games, where would this season have gone for him, and where would this season have gone for the Flames? And hindsight is 20/20. I'm not second-guessing the coaching staff for putting him in for those games, because the team in front of him wasn't good enough, and I think that's the reason why they leaned on Jacob Markstrom, who was definitely their most valuable player in the first 15 games of the season. But again, Pat, other than that back-to-back against the Canadiens next Friday and Saturday, I don't see a stretch that would really require rest for Jacob Markstrom. Now, do you want to rest him in one of those two games, which we look at as must-win games against the team they're chasing? Probably not. I mean, that would make the most sense. You've got a 7 o'clock start on the 23rd, a 5 o'clock start on the 24th, so maybe you give him one of those two games off, but you need those 4 points. If you don't want to give him one of those games off, I mean, you've got a game against the Canucks next Wednesday, and I don't think with all the things they've had to deal with on and off the ice, they're going to be the toughest opponent for the Flames, although you can't take anybody lightly, as we've learned with the Senators this season. But again, other than those two games against the Habs, I just don't see a natural spot to give him rest. So I guess we'll see how it plays out. If they don't string some more wins together, it might not matter. I guess that's the bottom
line. I was going to say, I'm not even worried about the rest part of it until you win some games in a row.
Yeah,
do that first and then entertain the rest.
Yeah, you got to get back in the race before.
Yeah, you talk about resting now when you're not even really back in the race, right? So wait till you're back in it, if you even get back in it. Then I can have that conversation.
All right, Wilsey, drive safe. We'll see you here in about 2 hours' time.
Okay, we'll see you soon. Bye, Will.
or Daryl.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. With 35 service bays to get your Mercedes-Benz ready for spring adventures. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.
We're into the playoffs on this date in Flames history, and 30 years ago today, one of the most memorable goals in franchise history. Stay with us on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames History starts now.
Today in Flames History, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
Okay, so let's start exactly 30 years ago today. One of the most famous goals in Calgary Flames history was scored in Game 6 of a first-round series in the Battle of Alberta. Flames trailed this series 3-1. They won Game 5 to force a Game 6 at Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton. 1-1 tie after 60 minutes, and cue number 14.
Messier gets it away. Here's Fleury looking for his first goal of the series. Scores! Fleury and the Flames are in seventh heaven.
Fleury scores the overtime winner at 4:40 of overtime. Flames come all the way back to force a Game 7 in the 1991 first-round series. And, Will, here's the worst part. They were up big in Game 7 before losing 5-4 to the Oilers at the Saddle Dome. Just 2 years after winning the Stanley Cup, they were right there, that close to knocking off the Oilers again. They forced a Game 7. They almost came all the way back from a 3-1 series lead, but couldn't get it done. And it's funny, you know, that moment from Theron Fleury will live on. It gets played all the time, whether we're talking Flames or just big goals, big overtime goals, period, because of the celebration that sent him vaulting down the ice, sliding across the Northlands Coliseum ice. But we had him on because at this stage last year, we were in the beginning stages of the pandemic and there was nothing on TV and nothing to talk about. So Pinder and I had Theo on and he was talking about that. He's like, yeah, it was a great goal and a great win. But even to this day, at that point, 29 years later, he's like, I still hate that goal because we didn't win Game 7. And so it was a huge goal and a famous goal. But if you're the Flames, you didn't win the next one.
No, you didn't, and it was kind of the beginning of some bad years for the Flames franchise, and maybe that's why it eats at Theo even more, but boy, for me, I don't know if anybody else listening would agree, but for me, you think of two goals when you think of the Calgary Flames. You think of Lanny in Montreal with his hands in the air, kind of skipping along the ice, and then you think of that goal at the Northlands Coliseum by Theo Fleury. Those are the ones that of the two images that kind of pop in your mind right away. Yes, obviously they've been played the most probably of any Flames goal, but that's what I think of immediately. So I knew exactly where you were going when you mentioned 91 and early April. That's the first place I go to.
Still pretty cool to see that goal. And Messier coughed it right up, and in goes Fleury, boom, in the back of the net. Flames do not win that series. They did win this game. Let's go back 31 years ago. The defending Stanley Cup champion, Calgary Flames, round one of their repeat bid. They're taking on this Los Angeles Kings team that was just starting to become a big deal. You know, the miracle on Manchester and Luc Robitaille and, you know, all of what had happened with Charlie Simmer and Marcel Dion. Like, it was a very good team, but now they had Gretzky. And now the Kings were a big deal in Hollywood. And now they had an opportunity up 3-2 in the series on the Calgary Flames at Pacific Coliseum in Los Angeles to knock off the defending Stanley Cup champions. We take you to double overtime of Game 6.
Bruce Olniski, a pass. Granato, a shot. Rebound and another save made by Vernon. It's cleared but not out. Duchesne with a drive. Save made by Vernon again. A poke time. They score!
If you're a longtime Flames fan, that one will kick you right in the gut. Absolutely, it was Doc Emmerich. Wow. The goal is one of the ugliest goals I've ever seen in my life. I've seen it millions of times, so I knew exactly what to expect. If you're a little bit of a younger Flames fan, though, double overtime in LA, Flames trying to force a Game 7. scramble in front of Mike Vernon's net. He makes like two or three stops. Then he's on his back. So is Mike Krushelnicki. And somehow Krushelnicki, not on his skates, flips the puck over, does a rainbow over a Mike Vernon who's on his back, flailing at the air, and it goes in. Just an absolute crusher, and the Kings knock off the defending Stanley Cup champions. They actually did that two times in a row the year before in 89 as the Flames won the Stanley Cup. The Kings knocked off the defending Stanley Cup champion Oilers, and 1 year later they knocked off the defending Stanley Cup champion Calgary Flames. So that was 31 years ago. A couple of other notes. Flames were eliminated in Game 4 of their best-of-five first-round series on this date in 1985. They lost 5-3 to the Winnipeg Jets. Doug Small led the way for the Jets. They won the series 3-1. And the Flames lost Game 1 of their second-round series to the Edmonton Oilers 6-3 on this date in 1983. But what was notable here, a couple of things. First of all, Paul Reinhardt had Calgary's only 3 goals in the loss. He became the first and still only Flames defenseman to record a playoff hat trick. He would do it a couple of years later again, and he's the only defenseman in NHL history to ever record 2 playoff hat tricks. But Marc Messier led the way. Despite Reinhardt with 3, Messier had 4 goals. Oilers took a 1-0 series lead, and the Oilers would win the series in 5. Those are your playoff notes. 2 birthdays today. Happy 54th to former defenseman Steve Chiasson, who was born in Barrie, Ontario, on this date in 1967. Originally acquired from Hartford in March 97, he'd play 168 games with Calgary, recording 15 goals, 59 assists, and 74 points. So happy birthday to Steve Chiasson. He turns 54, and Jason Weimer turns 45. He was born in Kimberley, B.C. on this date in 1976. He was acquired from Tampa in March 98. He'd play 252 games over 2 stints with Calgary, 34 goals, 32 assists, and 66 points. So happy 45th to Jason Weimer, 54th to Steve Chiasson. This date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
And I just want to make the one note, happy 54th birthday it would be for Steve Chiasson. He passed away, and I just wanted to amend that. I had that written down, and I didn't put it in. So he passed away in May 1999, so it would have been Steve Chiasson's 54th birthday today, and I just omitted that in my happy birthday, so I wanted to make sure and make that correction immediately. So it would have been the 54th birthday for Steve Chiasson, who passed away in 1999 in a car accident. So that is now corrected, and it is Jason Weimer's 45th birthday. That is this date in Flames.
Back to the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Ready to drop the mitts with Sportsnet hockey analyst Kevin Bieksa right now.
Kevin Bieksa is brought to you by UCGC. If your home needs repairs or an upgrade, contact UCGC today. Because when it comes to you, they're all in. Learn more at ucgc.ca.
Good news for Kevin Bieksa, our Sportsnet Wednesday analyst who joins us right now, a little earlier than normal. First of all, thank you for doing that. Second of all, you don't have to look at us today. It's over the phone today, not on Zoom. So congratulations.
Thank God. Thank God.
I was just waiting last week.
Yeah, I can't believe it took him that long to get that shot.
You waited till the very end of the conversation to get the Faces for Radio Blast in there. I was waiting for it.
Well, you know what? It was in my mind right away, and I thought, be nice, have restraint, and then at the end, I'm like, whatever, let's just throw it all out there.
As soon as I saw you guys, it was in my head. Fair enough. I don't blame you on that front. hey man, how do you look back on this trade deadline? It was for us, I think, maybe a little busier than we thought it was going to be. What about for you? You worked part of trade deadline. You were there analyzing it. How'd you think things went?
I think it went the way I expected it, and a lot of people did. I've heard both people say it was quiet, and you guys are kind of the first ones I've said that I've heard say busy. I don't know if it was busy, because I think a lot of us expected to have, you know, previous trade deadlines, we've had a lot more trade action, but with the restrictions and everything, I think everyone knew it would be a little less. So it probably was par for the course. I think the Mantha deal coming in after hours was a big one, and had that happened earlier in the day, we probably would have been talking about that a lot more, because that's a huge trade, and you see him come in and score a nice goal early, and he's a he's a good player that's probably under a lot of people's radars because he played in Detroit. And as we all know, nobody watches Detroit Red Wing games anymore since Zetterberg and Datsyuk and Lidstrom left. So, it was interesting. Obviously, the focus for us was on the Canadian teams. And there was some movement there, and Toronto obviously made some, you know, big moves and some big additions, and Montreal got some depth on defense, Edmonton a little depth on defense. So I'll let you guys direct me where you want to go with it, though.
Well, I mean, okay, let's talk about it from a Calgary standpoint. Sam Bennett goes to Florida. You've played against him in a few postseasons before. It's never been a situation where consistently it's worked out here in Calgary. He's a former fourth overall selection. Now he goes from a Canadian market, and he goes to a Florida market, which will be completely different. I'm curious as to how you think Bennett will perform in a new spot.
Well, first of all, from both teams' perspectives or from both team situations, in Florida, I talked about this a little bit. I just don't think Sam Bennett's a top six forward. And I know he probably thinks he is and hopes he is, and maybe he was projected to be that at some point. But on a good team, and it's not that four good lines to win in this league, especially in the playoffs. No, not a bad thing, but he's probably a third-line guy. And if he's a third-liner in Florida or a fourth-liner, then that's a really good deep team. But if he plays higher in that lineup for any extended period of time, I mean, I just don't think that team is that deep then, because he can be a good third-line, you know, checking winger, plays hard, pitches in offensively once in a while, throws some hits. I think that's what they're probably expecting him to be in Florida. And then, you know, as far as Calgary is concerned, I think they did well getting rid of him and getting a second round pick. And we had an interview with Brian Burke, and I don't know if I can't remember what it was on. I thought it was on the trade deadline coverage, and asking about Jeff Carter. And David Amber asked him, like, did you have to sell Jeff Carter to lift this no move clause? And Burke said, listen, we're the Pittsburgh Penguins. We don't kiss anybody's butt. If you don't want to come here, then don't come here. But I feel like it's an organization that, you know, has a lot of pride, and most people like look at us in high regard. I think the Calgary Flames should be the same way. Listen, you're a Canadian franchise. You got the best looking arena in the league in the Saddle Dome. You know, you've won Stanley Cups. You know, have a little pride. If there's a player that doesn't want to be there and doesn't want to be a Calgary Flame and put that C on and that jersey for all the players that have played behind him, then you should move that player, because you should have guys that want to be there and guys that are going to lay it on the line to play for the Calgary Flames.
So do you
back to the deadline in a second?
Just quickly, Will. Just let me jump in one more on Bennett. Just it just came to me right now. Like, so do you
think? Will.
your show, Pat. I'll just sit here.
No, I just wanted to follow up quickly on Bennett. It just came into my head right now, and. So do you think they waited too long to make that deal? Like, should they have done it earlier, or is waiting to the deadline okay?
Well, I like what they got back. I think that's fair for him, and that's a good deal. Who knows, right? We don't know what was offered before. Like, a distressed asset is the hardest asset to trade. We all know that. So when he made it public, or his agent made it public, that, you know, Bennett and even Mete, they weren't happy and they wanted to be moved, well, all of a sudden, the value goes down, because people are calling Calgary thinking, this guy wants out of here. We can just offer the bare minimum and hope Trev Living bites on something. And obviously, he can't do that, right? He's got to try to do what's best for his team. So I'm assuming that none of the offers were legit before, because they didn't move him. I think ideally, Trev Living would have loved to move him right away for fair value. But I just don't think that's the case when, you know, when a player comes out and says he's unhappy and doesn't want to be there.
Okay, I just wanted to see if there is a funny story. If not, we can move on. But before we get back to the deadline talk, what is the story behind the Brian Burke cutout?
Yes.
I mean, not a huge story, not an in-depth one. It's just Burkey drafted me. Burkey signed me to my first I mean, it was an ET.
Yeah,
it was entry level
contract. Parking lot fight. He's like, I need to have this guy for sure.
Yeah, and he signed me to a nice three-way deal, like an NHL, AHL, East Coast League salary. So, but he basically gave me an opportunity, and I've got to know Burkey even more over the years when he was in Anaheim, and I don't know, we just have a great relationship. And then working together the last couple of years, he's a little bit of a mentor to me. So, you know, it's a way of, you know, honoring him, poking fun at him. You know, it's just a fun way to kind of, you know, bring recognition to Berkey, who's obviously a great hockey guy. And he knows so much about the game from so many different areas, like as a player, as a GM, as an executive with the NHL, as a, you know, as now a president. You know, the guy has just done it all and seen it all. So it's interesting to pick his brain. And I just, my wife honestly ordered it online. She was thinking the one day, I'm going to order you a life-size cutout of Brian Burke. Like, this is what my wife thinks about. I'm like, yeah, great idea. Like, obviously I'll put it in the shot if you order. So it comes like 4 days later. I don't even remember. I think it was like $250 or something, because it's so good. The quality is so good. And now that I used it for comic relief a few times, I don't want to get rid of it. It was like $250. So it honestly sits in my office in the corner. And every once in a while, I'm on like a call or a meeting and someone's like, where's that Brian Burke cutout? And I bring it into the pitcher, and it's made its value back for sure for me.
Your wife is gaining legendary status from the Vern Fiddler photos to the Kessler photos to the Brian Burke cutout. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she's pretty witty that way. I guess she kind of have to be to put up with all my nonsense and all my chirps. And she said to me, like, we've been together since we were, we've dated off and on since we were 16. We're, you know, grew up and hung out together as 8-10-year-olds in the same town. But she said to me when we first got together, she goes, you just, like, you're just mouth everybody off. Like, you're so mouthy. And I said, well, yeah, like, in a good way, but, like I mouth off my family, my brothers, my sisters, like, even my mom in a respectful way. And she learned very, very quick to have thick skin, and you better give it back at some point. And she gives it back as good as anybody in our family now.
He is Kevin Bieksa, Sportsnet NHL analyst. He joins us every single Wednesday here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Back to the deadline and hockey talk. Kevin, there's a lot of criticism around the lack of movement from the Winnipeg Jets, especially when you look at what Toronto did. How much separation do you see now after we've passed the deadline between the Leafs and the Jets?
I don't think there's as much separation as people think. I think sometimes less is more. Winnipeg has a really good thing going right now where they're, you know, I think they're overachieving. They're getting the most out of most guys in the lineup. You got to remember Blake Wheeler's been hurt for a while and he's coming back. That's like adding a star player right there on its own. I think defensively, I really think they probably tried to add like an Ekholm or a Manson, but just had to give up too much in the process and just weighing the pros and cons of it thought, you know, as much as it'd be great to add a guy like that, you know, it'd probably be plucking away one of their good forwards like a Mason Appleton or, you know, maybe like a Sammy Niku. And I just don't think that they thought it was worthwhile for how good of a team they have. So they added Jordy Benn for a little depth on defense. He can play the right side, even though he's a left-hand shot. He can block shots. He can be physical. He's a playoff-type guy. He's not going to complain if he's in and out of the lineup. So I think they just did. They addressed the one need that they had, and that was depth defense. And their forwards, guys, they're as good as anybody's. Honestly, like first, second, third, fourth line, if you add them all up together, if you give them all the grade out of 10 and add them up together, they're as good as any team in the NHL, I think. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. So as much as the Leafs made more moves, I still think the Jets are in pretty good shape.
I love how you kind of framed that because you set up my next question beautifully. Mike Fiuta was on Sportsnet yesterday talking about the Jets' moves. He was asked about them, and you mentioned the young talent on the blue line, their draft picks, and maybe not wanting to pay that price for a guy like Ekholm. And, you know, Fiuta's whole point was that it's a really tough destination for free agents, and Cheveldayoff, it really has to build that team through the draft, and that's why he keeps those so close to his chest. As a former player, I mean, just, I guess, you know, what goes through your mind in free agency? You're a guy who's played in some pretty good markets in Vancouver and Anaheim. You mentioned it in previous calls that you were close with the Flames a couple of times, but I guess just, you know, your thought and your reaction to that opinion from Fiuta yesterday.
Well, I talked to Mike on Monday right after the trade deadline. I did a hit with him and Tim from Tim and Friends, and he's a good hockey mind. He's, you know, he's won two Stanley Cups, and he knows what goes on behind the scenes. And I think just in Winnipeg, and I played in Winnipeg. I loved my time there. Closed the Winnipeg Arena, opened the MTS Center, played in there brand new, you know, 14,000 fans in the AHL lockout season. Awesome city. But it is a tough destination to attract free agents. So I understand you do have to build your team within a little bit. And those draft picks and those young guys are critical to the success and the future of your team. So when you do it the right way and you do build the team like they have now, why would you go out and compromise all that work and all that patience you've had for a Josh Manson, who I think is a great player, but, you know, maybe you just have to give up too much for it. Maybe you have to give up too much for Ekholm. I'm sure for Ekholm, they were asking for everything. You know, the first rounders and a prospect and a player in the lineup. So I just think like, you got a good thing going. Paul Maurice and I only had Paul Maurice a short time at the World Championships, but he ran the D, so I worked with him really close for 3 weeks. He's as good of a coach as anybody I've seen in the NHL as far as understanding the game and communicating with the players. And he said earlier this year, he's been with the Jets for a while, he said this is the least amount of coaching he's ever had to do in a season because he's had this core group for a while. They're all dialed in. They all know what they have to do. They hold each other accountable. You see how it didn't quite work out with Laine there because maybe not a guy who wants to be held accountable by his peers. He's out the door. In comes Dubois. He slots in now. And I just think they got a really good group going and a good thing. And they've been my sleeper pick to come out of the North for a long, long time now.
Kevin, now that the trade deadline has come and gone, what's it like in a locker room, especially one, for instance, like Calgary's or other teams that, you know, you didn't know whether you were staying or going or what the situation is going to be? Once the deadline passes, is there a sense of relief? Can that be a big weight off a team's shoulders?
Yeah, there's relief for sure because, you know, there's guys that are worried about it. There's guys that don't really care, maybe young guys without families that are whatever happens. If I get moved, most likely it'll be to a team where they're going to want me to have a bigger role. So for those kind of young guys, yeah, they don't care too much. But for the older guys that don't want to leave, that have houses and they don't rent and they have families and wives and kids in school, you know, and they think there's a chance they might be moved, yeah, that there's a huge relief after. But normally there's 6 weeks after the trade deadline. And what do we have now? I think we have 3 or 4 weeks left in the season. And
yeah,
for the Calgary Flames, let's face it, by 2 weeks today, we will know if they're in the playoffs or their season's over. If they go 4-1 against Montreal, they got a really good chance. If they go 3-2 or 2-3 or 1-4 or 0-5, season's over. So if I'm a Calgary Flame, this next 2 weeks is your season for sure. And those next 5 games against Montreal, that's your Stanley Cup playoffs right there.
I know you know him a little bit and you certainly, exchange jabs, I'm sure, over the years. Not sure if you guys ever dropped the mitts, Kevin, but your thought as Milan Lucic hits 1,000 games last night.
No, I'm a Lucic fan, and I've actually talked to Lucic a bunch of times over the last couple years. It's funny, like we got a lot of mutual friends now. We've had a couple of calls together. We talked about some PA stuff, so. We actually talked last year after playoffs for a while, and he was pretty happy that I was talking so highly of him during the playoffs. And I'm like, hey man, like you're the one doing it, not me. Like I'm just calling it like it is. You're playing great, and I think I talked about when he beat the wheels off of Beaulieu. I talked about how tough he is. I mean, that's no secret. Like the guy's been one of the toughest guys in the NHL for the last decade. So I that's all him. I'm just calling a spade a spade. I appreciate a guy who plays the game hard. He's had a great career. Guys that are that big and that tough, they usually don't play, 1,000 games. So that's what makes him so impressive. It's the game has transitioned to a lot more of a speed, skill kind of game. And here's a guy who's still pitching in, still contributing, even though he was probably more suited for that, mid-90s, early 2000s kind of game. He's adapted. He's evolved. He's probably worked a ton in the summer on skating and skills to stay in the league and stay competitive. And he's had a great season. And I just love how he goes into his 1,000th game and he's got a young guy in Sabourin who's a tough kid and just looking to make a name for himself and just stay in the Leafs lineup. First game with a new team. And Luge could easily have said, beat it, kid. Like, get out of here. Like, I've fought everyone under the sun. It's my 1,000th game. You know, I'm in my 30s. Like, I got whatever goals he has, he had a good season goal-wise. He could have easily said, beat it. And he's like, no, let's go, kid. I'll take on all comers at all times. Great fight. Gets cut, laughing as he skates off. Like, if you don't love that as a hockey player, then you don't love the game.
I love too how Saverin was like trying to embrace and Lucci's like pushing off him. He's like, get off me, kid. I don't want to take your post-fight hug. That was pretty funny. And you know, just the last thing I'll add on Lucic, because you mentioned, you know, playing that style and getting to 1,000 games is impressive. We talked about it yesterday, but you spent some time in that league. And there's certain different routes for every player, and I fully understand that. He came up at a time where maybe, you know, you do spend time in the American Hockey League. But I just looking at his player card yesterday, it's pretty impressive too when you think that he didn't play one single game or hasn't played a single game in the minors.
Yeah, no, that is very impressive. And that's the one thing maybe about coming up and being a pretty big, mature guy, young, and being a tough guy playing for the Vancouver Giants.
Right?
He could handle the physicality of the NHL when he first came up, right? And I came into the NHL after 4 years of university and a lockout season where I spent the whole year in the AHL. Like, I was physically ready at 24 years old to play in the league. I was a beast. I was lifting more than everybody. But this guy was like that at 20 years old. Like, that's what's so impressive, right? So you're right. Like, pretty impressive to say he's been an NHL player since he was 20 years old and still kicking, still scoring goals, still beating the wheels off of guys. So he's had a great career.
Wrapping up with Kevin Bieksa, just two fun ones to wrap things up. One will Flames fans will enjoy, one they won't enjoy so much. First of all, it was 6 years ago today that your team, the Canucks, and the Flames started their first round series. And this was game one when the Flames won. Your group won game two, and that game two was at the end. There is that huge brawl, which I believe you were a part of. I believe Derek Engelin fought two.
No,
guys
I wasn't.
The same. You weren't part of it?
I wasn't a part of that. And I'll tell you a little quick story about that series, because that was my last series as a Vancouver Canuck.
Yeah.
And so just before that series, I get a lung infection. Right? Like I get a lung infection and I'm deathly sick. Like, I'm not doing warm-ups, I'm not practicing, I'm basically showing up for the game, going on the ice. When I come off the ice, I'm coughing, I'm hacking up, you know, I'm puking on the bench. I did this the whole series. On top of that, you got this Ferlin kid who's just running around and just destroying everybody in sight. So this guy's taking a run at me every single shift. I have no energy. I have nothing. Like, I'm playing on fumes. I'm not even eating. That wasn't a very fun playoff series for me, to be honest with you. Like, it was like playing, you know, 20 minutes a night and just getting run over by this young, eager, strong kid, chased around the ice, you know, no energy left at the end of the game. Like, I remember I think I got hit from behind by Sam Bennett once. No, like, my shoulder was like popped. Like, it was just wasn't a fun series. And then, you know, you're right. Like, Calgary ended up beating us there. And then I went into my year-end meeting with Vancouver, the coaches then, Willie Desjardins and Sullivan. And I was just so frustrated. And I didn't like the way I felt and like the way the series went. And that was basically the end of me as a Vancouver Canuck. So, sorry, I'd like to take over. You had a question there?
Not really. That's more than enough. Okay, but I do have one. Did you actually, like, did you know his last name was Ferland at the time, or did you actually think it was Ferkland?
No, like, you feel like, if you see me now when I'm on Saturday nights, I have an idea sometimes what guys' names are, but sometimes I just don't put in the effort to totally. I'm a guy who's a visual guy, so if I see your name spelled out, I'll remember it. But I never saw his name spelled out. I didn't know if it was Ferland, Ferkland, and then after a while, I knew it wasn't Ferkland. And it was just like a disrespect to him, you know, just to keep calling him that.
Well,
but you know what?
I was like, going to say, Pat, this is the same guy who told you the Ryan Kessler story where led the reporter on thinking he was Kess. You really think that this guy is going to, he knew what Ferland's name was, but it was well played. One of the best troll jobs of all time. Flames fans to this day.
But you know what?
Every second Wednesday you're on, people are like, tell him his name is Ferland. So I think they want to let you know.
It's funny, when I went to a Canucks game a couple of years ago, we were in Vancouver for a minor hockey tournament. I brought my son and three of his buddies and my dad to the game and a couple friends. And we went into the Canucks dressing room. And of course, like, I knew three quarters of the team and all the trainers, and everyone's coming over and giving everyone, you know, high fives and hugs and everything. And then Ferlin kind of walks by me, and like, he was probably didn't know what to do. And I stop him and I shake his hand. I go, how's it going? And he goes, oh, good, good, good. And it was kind of like a weird interaction, but it was, you know, I always respected the guy. I loved guys that the first time we lined up together in Vancouver for those playoffs, it might not have been the first time, but it was the first game. He lined up beside me and he looks over at me. He goes, "Hey," he goes, "I've watched you play my whole life as a kid. Like, I loved the way you play." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then he goes, "Want to fight?" And I go, "You just told me how much you love me, and then you're asking me to fight." Keep in mind, I have like no energy here, and I'm like, if I don't have to fight, I'm not. So I'm like, "Beat it, kid." And then by the end of it, I basically had enough. At the end of the one game in Calgary, I go, "We're going." You know, he kind of didn't hear me, and then next thing you know, I didn't care anymore. But we got a pretty interesting relationship. The next two fights, because we fought three times in a couple of years, the next two fights, we had, after each fight was over, it was pat on the back, "Great job, man." Like, no hard feelings. Like, I always respected guys like that.
Can we just confirm then that the Calgary Flames broke Kevin Bieksa as a Vancouver Canucks? The Calgary Flames ended your career?
No.
He's not admitting that. There's no way he's admitting that.
No. It was some viral infection that broke me, and Ferland just put the final dagger into my back.
Okay, just before we let you go, we always have staging on the day before you, and Will got staging to tell a story about when 2 years later you faced the Flames in round one as a member of the Anaheim Ducks, and we all know the problems that Calgary had playing in Anaheim. Listen to this story from staging as the team found out they were playing your team 4 years ago.
We were doing a little year-end get-together before the playoffs started, so we had a little bowling event, and we were pretty close to playing the Edmonton Oilers, if you recall. We had the game on while the team was bowling with our girlfriends and wives, and Edmonton, or I think it was LA, was playing Anaheim, and if it got to overtime, or if Anaheim won, we would have played, or if LA won, we would have played Edmonton, but it was a late goal, and it went to overtime, and it worked out, so we ended up playing Anaheim, which we all know the history in that building for such a long time in the last 20 years. But when they tied it up, you just kind of you felt a little bit of that feeling in the room, you know, a gasp of, "Oh, shit, we got to go to," excuse my language, "but we got to go to Anaheim and play somewhere that we have not won." But we wanted the challenge. We were up for the challenge, but definitely if you could, you know, play Edmonton, have a battle of Alberta, I think it might have done us a little better than having the old Honda Center in the back of our minds going into game one.
See, like, of all the players to drop, of all the guests to drop a four-letter bomb live on the air, Stajan would have been the last guy, and talking about playing the Ducks in 2017 got him to drop a four-letter bomb live on the air.
You know what? We knew about that, and somebody was friends with somebody on the Flames. I can't remember who it was. And they told us when they were having that bowling night that Johnny Gaudreau said out loud, "I do not want to play the Ducks." So we knew that going into it came up in our team meeting before the round. And honestly, like, we were such a tough team that, and we probably should have won. That was probably my best chance. I went to game seven of the finals, but I feel like that was probably my best chance to win the Stanley Cup with that team. We were so good and we were so tough and so big. And when we played Johnny, every single guy on our team would chip him, would hit him, would intimidate him. It's like a funny story. Like, this is just how bad it was. Like, you could tell he hated playing us because we had a bunch of wagons on our team that would just do stupid stuff. There was a faceoff in the neutral zone and in Calgary. So it would have been games three or four. I can't remember. And it was the first period. And all of a sudden, I think like Pat Maroon or Chris Stewart, somebody was getting into it with one of the Calgary tougher guys. And Corey Perry was lined up on the far boards with Johnny Gaudreau on the wing. And all of a sudden, the referees and linesmen go to break up that one little altercation. And Corey Perry, like the sociopath he is on the ice, just absolutely sees that nobody's watching and absolutely golf swings Johnny Gaudreau on the wrist.
I remember that.
Yeah. And Gaudreau just like looks up at him like, "What is your problem?" And then Perry just like straight face looks ahead like, "What? What?" Like, so can you imagine if you're this poor guy and every single guy on the other team, like even the skill guys, are trying to kill you? Like, of course he didn't like playing us. We bullied the whole team. Like, we were a good hard-nosed team that year.
You literally went from playing for the Canucks, who was the most hated team in this city, to then you and Kessler both end up in Anaheim, and then Perry's there as well, and then immediately the Ducks became the most hated team in Calgary.
Yeah, so maybe not today, but we got to get, because Kevin and him obviously are pals. This city hates Ryan Kessler, so we need to maybe get into that a little bit too at some point.
I'm sure he would, if I talked to him, I'm sure he would come on one day with me, as long as he could be open and honest about how he feels about, because Kess and I, our last couple of years in particular, every time either of us would touch the puck, we would get booed until we let the puck go.
Oh, yeah.
So there's, yeah, like, and obviously, like, I can laugh about it now, but I bet you he's still a little bit rattled and still hates Calgary fans.
We should maybe get that going.
Yeah. We'll see. Maybe that'll be a little treat. Maybe it'll be a little postseason or end of the season treat before playoffs.
I like that.
And Pat can tell the story of when he came on and called late and absolutely just did not want to be on with Pat. That would be a good time.
I think I've told that story.
Yeah, and Pat can just take over the whole interview again and veto you every time you try to ask a question.
Yeah.
I think
three words in. No, Will, this is my interview. Shut up. Move along.
Yeah.
No. Thought it was a good follow-up to the Sam Bennett question.
Okay, guys, I got to go eat some Panda Express with my daughter. Great chatting.
Bye, Kevin.
See you guys.
Kevin Bieksa is brought to you by UCGC. If your home needs repairs or an upgrade, call UCGC today and discover the difference between DIY and a full renovation. Learn more at ucgc.ca.
Logan Gordon's up next. Biggest stories of the day. Stay with us for headlines around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the brand new 2022 QX55 for $299 semi-monthly with $4,995 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Okay, let's get at it for our friends at Hyatt Infinity. It is time for some headlines. Logs, where are we starting today?
Who the hell are you?
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Good morning, Logan.
Logan.
All right, so now let's talk about what really struck me about Logan. He's older, he's weaker.
Can't Logan find better work?
I'm an idiot! You're an idiot! You're an idiot!
Well, we're starting with that, first of all. Then
hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick. Guys, we'll start with some Calgary Flames news off of the ice first. We do have a game day to get to, and we will talk about that shortly. But we'll start off headlines today with some arena news. This coming down a little bit earlier today. If you want full coverage on it, head over to our pal Ryan Pike over on Twitter. But Calgary Municipal Land Corporation releasing a statement today. This is from Kate Thompson. She is the president and CEO. Quote, Calgary Municipal Land Corporation, along with our partners at the City of Calgary, provided an update to council at the April 13th closed meeting on the progress of the event center. We started this project by developing principles and a program that would create a building that Calgarians would be proud to have in their city. And over the past several months, the team has developed a design to reach that goal. At this early stage in the project, there is a difference in the current budget estimate and the program requirements for the facility. Given the significance and importance of the project, the parties have jointly agreed to pause the project team and allow time to resolve these challenges. The decision to take this pause is the responsible and prudent approach to ensure we find the best solutions to move the project forward successfully without incurring any additional costs on the project. While these discussions progress, the team is currently working collaboratively to find a suitable path forward. That's end quote. That's from Kate Thompson, President CEO, Calgary Municipal Land Corporation, Pat. So some budget overages, putting a pause on the event center as of right now.
This is a tough one because I you know things that you can't say, so I got to be careful with this one. And the only reason I can't say them is because there's things that would actually be illegal if I said them. So I got to be really careful here. But what I know about this is that, yes, there are cost overruns, and I think right now, from what I understand, the question is who is going to pay for these cost overruns? The escalating prices of materials, border closures, and even things like the U.S. economy have caused the budget estimates for this event center in Calgary to go higher than first expected. But
that is expected, and that is something that I think everyone knew was going to happen in this process. So I think the question now is, and I think what the debate is going to be, all right, who's on the hook for these overages? And I think that that's what this comes down to. So it's a dicey scenario, but everything I'm led to believe, Will, is that yes, this is a pause, this is a stumbling block, but by no means is this going to be anything but a small hurdle. Everybody that I talk to who is in tune with this project and more in tune than I am, everyone I talk to suggests that, yep, this is definitely a roadblock, but by no means an insurmountable one. It's just going to take a little conversation and a little debate to get over it. That's kind of what I'm comfortable saying publicly right now about this situation.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add. I know that Mayor Nenshi talked today and said this happens with almost every big project, and it's better to have these discussions now instead of after construction has begun. So that's pretty much all I will add to that conversation.
I guess the last thing I'd say, Logs, is this is not something that if you were hoping the arena was not going to get built and you know, for taxpayer reasons, and that's not something that you wanted to see the city contribute, I don't think that it's going to go that way. And if you're really excited for the arena to be built and you're worried that this is going to derail it, I don't think it's going to. I do think this is still going to go through. And that's just my fairly objective view on it, or trying to be objective view on the situation.
So that's the latest on the arena news that we got today about the event center. So we'll move now to on-ice discussions. The Calgary Flames coming off of that overtime win against the Maple Leafs last night, heading to Montreal for probably, it's easy to say, guys, their most important series of the season today. They begin the first of two against Montreal, five of the next seven against the team they are directly chasing in the North Division. Daryl Sutter didn't speak for long this morning with the media, but he had a bit of a clarification, if you will, when it comes to the fact that just because the Flames aren't always scoring doesn't necessarily mean they don't have confidence.
Well, the perception is that when you don't score that you don't have confidence, but it's totally the wrong one, Brendan. This team has worked hard and played with confidence right through. I think there's young guys that are learning the league, and even though they've been in the league for a number of years, the league changed and the style of game changed. So that's the big adjustments. Got nothing to do with offense or scoring or any of that at all. It's being able to play a complete game the way the game's being played now.
It's been a bit of a tough stretch at times for the Flames under Daryl Sutter, Pat, but they've strung together two in a row, and now they head into this series against Montreal with, pretty easy to say, their season on the line.
Yes, and I look at this, Will. Must win, sure, but more importantly, as we talked about with Derek, can't lose is the way I look at this game tonight. It's the first of five against Montreal, and winning that first one is just massively important. So I'm looking at it as can't lose even more so than I look at it as must win.
You're just changing the words, Pat. You have the same. It's still must win. You're just changing the words. I like
the
creativity.
The problem is, like, if they win, it's like, okay, yeah, they've won, but that's not. If they lose, I think that you can pretty much say goodnight. If they win, you know what? They're a little bit further off the ground.
Fair enough. I would suggest, as I said before, I think a lot of eyes will be on tonight in terms of now that there's a ton of pressure. I would say that the Flames, you know, for any, whether the Flames or the Oilers, the Canucks, anybody, you hear the outside noise, especially when it's as bad at times as it's been here this season. So I look at the last two games as a team, the Flames, playing with essentially not a lot of pressure, deadline upcoming. Everyone's counting you out, so that's easy to play. Now you're playing the team that you're chasing. If you believe you have any chance, there's a lot of pressure on you to have success tonight. We'll see what unfolds in just over an hour's time.
15 minutes away from Flames warm-up, an hour and 15 away from puck drop with Derek Wills right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. As we get closer to the Vancouver Canucks' potential return to action, we're getting more information from the team as we're starting to hear from some of the guys as they announced seven more players have come off of the COVID protocol list. They're supposed to be back in action on Friday. We heard Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly talking about the situation today, saying that they aren't twisting anyone's arms. Everything was done collaboratively with the club, input and consent. Then you have Thomas Drance of The Athletic talking to JT Miller today and saying that he doesn't feel ready to go at all and doesn't feel as though it's safe what they're doing, jumping back into action after this COVID shutdown and being forced into such a drastically fast-paced schedule. Well, we've all had our questions about this. We don't know one way or the other how this is going to work out, but from the offset, we've actually started to hear Canucks today speaking about how even they are starting to wonder just how smart this whole plan is.
It's a good thing I'm not employed by the NHL because I can say whatever I want. And that press release to me is a bunch of BS. This was not done collaboratively. This was done with gun to your head. You've got to play all these games in 31 days and just shut up and don't ask questions. All you got to do is look at the comments from JT Miller today. He was asked bluntly, should you be playing? Quote, I don't want to be caught agreeing with you. There's a lot of moving parts, but I don't know. It's unfortunate that we're even in a scenario like this. I don't feel ready, if I'm being honest. It's kind of crazy. I know everyone has a job to do, but to expect our entire team to be ready to play in one practice and a pregame skate, it's a bit hard to comprehend, end quote. And so I guess I am calling Coley Campbell a liar, Pat, but this to me was not done collaboratively. And I see there should be no way they're playing in 2 days, but somehow they're going to be. And I feel sorry for everybody on that team. JT Miller would also say that he did not test positive for COVID or the variant. And he says, just sitting around, my lungs are screaming. I'm not ready to play. So he didn't go through a respiratory issue. This is not pretty. And as I said to Elliot on Monday, I can't imagine what is going on behind closed doors with the NHLPA.
Here is the quote that jumps out to be most. Logan kind of made reference to it from JT Miller. He's speaking to the media. I believe he's still speaking to the media right now. Quote, what we're being asked to do is not going to be too safe if you're asking me, end quote. That comes from JT Miller to Vancouver media today. And
but it was done collaboratively, Pat. It was done collaboratively.
Here is the issue for me is, I mean, whether the NHL wants to die on that hill or not about it being collaborative, this is a ridiculous situation. Not only is it 19 games in 31 days, but, you know, a guy that both Logan and I follow in Vancouver, our boy Taj, tweeted this earlier today. And Jason Tatum got COVID months ago, and he still isn't feeling at 100%. And, you know, you can tell me all you want about how it impacts healthy people compared to and young people as opposed to others. That's not the case with the Vancouver Canucks. Multiple guys have gotten symptoms, and a few guys have gotten it bad. They've all had to take 3+ weeks off their schedule. 20 guys appeared on the COVID list. Numerous of those had to fight the illness. And now you're asking them to play 19 games in 31 days. Even if this was just because the Canucks decided they wanted to binge watch Game of Thrones for 3 weeks and then come back to play, asking them to play 19 and 31 is ludicrous. But to do it, Logan, with the specter of these guys, many of them testing positive for COVID, having symptoms, and that's going to be a big enough battle to come back. Ask the St. Louis Blues how easy it was to play in the playoffs when they got absolutely riddled with it. I think the NHL is asking a lot of the Vancouver Canucks, and I give a lot of credit to JT Miller for sticking his neck out and not just towing the company
Amen.
Line because this is a really untenable situation. I think the NHL needs to reevaluate their course here.
So that's the situation with the Canucks as of right now. They're still scheduled to be back in action on Friday. We'll quickly wrap up headlines today here, guys, with a quick highlight from the Jays game. The only one that matters as they finished off their series against the Yankees. We head to the bottom of the ninth, game all tied up at 4.
Going into play today. Breaking ball high in the air. Hicks ranging back at the wall, at the track. Get out of here. God, a walk-off home run for Bo Bichette. Have a day, Bo.
Damn it, Buck. Where is the swing and a drive?
Swing and a drive.
Last quick thought to you, Pat. Bo Bichette really turning into one of the superstars the Jays need going forward here.
No doubt about it. Vladdy's having a good season. I still think we're talking about him as a potential superstar in this league, but I think if you're Bo Bichette, if you're a fan of Bo Bichette, you've chosen the right guy. Jays back to 500. Good two games against the Yankees to wrap it up. They're into Kansas City tomorrow, 6 o'clock. We'll have it for you on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Big Show headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease or finance selected Infinity models and receive three payments on Hyatt Infinity. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Back with some final thoughts on the Flames and the Habs when we come back on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
You're locked on to the Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Cal and Gary's is the only family of products curated for the tastes of Calgarians. And you'll only find them at Calgary Co-op.
Flames, Habs, 5 o'clock, warm-up just minutes away. Will, can you be less morbid when you tell me how surprised you'll be if anybody not named Jacob Markstrom starts in net tonight?
Pat, I'll drop dead.
I said less dead. Morbid, you psycho.
Oh, I thought you said more. My mistake. No, I would be absolutely stunned if it wasn't Jacob Markstrom tonight. And look, I know that he has not been playing terrific hockey of late. We haven't had a lot of time to talk about last night's game, Pat, but I mean, that save on Mitch Marner was ridiculous. He's been playing a little bit better of late. Not bad when you can, have a game like last night and a shutout on Saturday. I would say that until you're kind of put in a worse spot, you may as well put your best goaltender in net.
I'm with you. I will be stunned if anybody not named Jacob Markstrom starts tonight. And for the record, we have the conversation on the round table about resting him, and I think that that is a conversation that you can have down the road if the Flames string together a run here where they can go 6 of 7 or something like that and get themselves more realistically into the race. Then I think the rest conversation is reality. For now, though, yeah, you got to go with Markstrom tonight. I will also be stunned if they go any other direction. That'll wrap us up inside hockey. It'll also wrap us up from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at IconicEC. Our buddy Andrew Patterson's back tomorrow with us on The Big Show, a full edition of the show from 2 till 6 tomorrow. For Will and Logan, I'm Pat. Flames warm-up is next on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. With new product families, member rewards, and sales events, you'll find more quality, more savings in every department.